this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant, it's just that they know so much that isn't so.
Welcome to the Red State Town Hall program. I'm your host, Primo Mondoni. My co-host, Ken Brown, will join me in a couple of minutes. Please visit the show's website at redstatetownhall.com. While you're there, be sure to like us on both Facebook and Twitter. Which contact us, email address is Primo, P-R-E-M-O, at redstatetownhall.com. Our show is broadcast here on Red State Talk Radio, America's premier grassroots conservative internet talk radio network. The show is also syndicated through iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podomatic, TalkStream Live, Player.fm, Roku, and at least a dozen other websites. You can listen to the station using their Android, iPhone, and BlackBerry apps. Visit the station's website, redstatetalkradio.com, to download the appropriate app for your smartphone. If you don't have a smartphone, you can listen using any phone on the station's 24/7 listener line provided by TalkStream Live by dialing the following for Studio A, 605-562-4209, and for Studio B, 518-712-0045. Before we start the show, let's give a shout-out to our AM, FM, and digital affiliates, WDDQ, FM 92.1, Adel, Georgia, WSFB, 1490 AM, Talk 97.7 FM, Quitman, Georgia, WJNW, AM 1650, Hermitage, Tennessee, Talk Radio, AM 1620, KTFL, Gilbert, Arizona, WMQL Radio, FM 105.5, Bouffard, North Carolina, Kaufman County Talk Radio, AM 1680, KCTR, Terrell, Texas, Taxpo Radio, Gainesville, Georgia, WCNR Digital, West Virginia, and K98Talk.com. I think that's everybody. Now let's bring on my co-host from Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Ken Brown. Mr. Brown, how you doing today, sir?
I just take a short nap when you do all that.
Yeah, I know. I'd like to, too. I need to pre-record that, I guess. I used to have it pre-recorded, but there's so many – I had to pre-record it and change it so many times because different stations coming on and off and all that stuff. I'm like, well, it maybe makes more sense just to read the stupid thing. So, anyway, how's your weekend?
It's been a little wet down here, but Halloween is come and gone. And we're in November now, aren't we? Ooh.
We are in November, and I hope everyone turned their clocks back and all that kind of crap and blah, blah, blah. But you know what? This whole thing, daylight saving time, I just don't get it. Maybe it made sense back in the old days, you know, for farmers. I don't even know if it makes any sense at all, really, to be honest with you. And the fact that, see, we used to do it on the summer solstice and the winter solstice. I mean, not summer solstice, but the winter and fall solstice and stuff. Spring, whatever. Now we don't even do that anymore because Congress, in their infinite wisdom, decided that it needed to be an extra month here and 2 months here, and they have. We're not even doing it based on the sun anymore, which is stupid. If you're going to do it, at least do it based on the natural. You know what I'm saying? Does that not? I don't know. I guess it's one of those pet peeves I have. that Congress thinks it knows better than God.
Did it start with Nixon when it started?
I don't. You know what? That's a good question. Seems like I think it actually was. Did not like one of the founding fathers, Benjamin Franklin, or something, come up with the idea?
Well, wasn't it? I'm thinking back when Nixon was president. We were kids. It was. They were trying to make the days longer because it was better because we're trying to conserve energy. Remember the gas crisis and all that crap that was going on back then?
Well, that sounds more like a Jimmy Carter thing, to be honest with you. But I don't know if it was Carter or not, to be honest with you.
I'm pretty sure it was Nixon that did it and or started it. And we've been doing it ever since.
Yeah, I mean, somebody I guess we ought to look that up one of these days. You know, you got nothing else better to do, look that up. But anyway, let's go ahead and get started here. We've got plenty to talk about. Well, Obama, this guy, if this guy isn't the worst foreign policy president in the history of the United States of America, I don't know who the hell is.
Well, I wouldn't stop there.
This week he reversed course. You know, he said we weren't going to put any boots on the ground in Syria. And whether you agree with that or not, whatever. But he's already gone back on his word, and we are now putting boots on the ground in Syria. But, of course, I was going to say, Ken, that he's only dipping his big toe into the pool, but really it's more like the little toe. He's only authorizing 50 U.S. troops, I guess Special Forces guys, if I remember right, to go into Syria. So now we have boots on the ground. We have the 50 troops, supposedly. But Barack Obama cannot admit, and his staff cannot admit, and the White House press secretary cannot admit that he's actually reversed course. And the fact is he has. And the thing is, I don't know about you, Ken, but I don't necessarily have a problem with whether or not we have boots on the ground. I mean, I don't want to get into a big, prolongated war in Syria, that's for sure. But I'm not sure. What the hell are 50 troops going to do? I mean, really, just be honest.
Well, I would not want to be one of the 50. I'd want to be – if I was one of the 50, I'd be going, can we have like maybe 1,000?
Yeah. Can you send another 950 guys with us so that we have a fighting chance here? Yeah. 50 guys? Jeez. Hell, there's probably 50 people who are responsible for Obama's safety every time he steps out of the White House and gets on the – Air Force One or whatever. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That's just ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to do it, do it. If I were going to do it, I would send, like you say, at least 1,000 troops, maybe hell, another, maybe 5,000. Man, I don't know what the magic number is. I tell you what, though, it would not be a political decision. It would be something where I would go to my generals and I'd say, what do we need? How many men do we need? What supplies? What equipment do they need? Let's get it done. I want this done, but let's do it the right way and the smart way and the safest way possible. That would be my only consideration. It wouldn't be whether or not I had politically made a statement saying I wouldn't do it and all that kind of crap. That's not leadership, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, we haven't had one in 7 years.
Well, yeah, we've not. Yeah, there's not been leadership in this White House in a while. Anyway, I just thought I want to bring that up and just take a look at the Middle East and what a damn mess it is now with this guy in charge. And well, I tell you what, he is leaving a huge mess. Whoever is going to be the next president, what a mess he's going to have, a hot mess he's going to have dumped in his lap as soon as he walks in the door.
If you remember, like I do, about Iraq, the Rubio was right when he talked about the mainstream media is the super PAC for the Democrats. Because they don't bring this up, but Iraq was doing just fine before Obama started withdrawing troops.
Well, let's qualify that. It was at least stable.
Oh well, I'm saying it's, and I'll go even further about that than saying stable because you never heard about it on the news anymore. Mainstream media left it alone because it was not making news. Things were stable over there, even more so than just the word stable. I think.
Yeah.
But when Obama started withdrawing troops, he created that vacuum, and he created that mess that's over there. He created ISIS, and so those things are his fault. But the mainstream media does not say that. And he doesn't say that. He says, oh, I ended the war. I brought the troops home. No, you didn't. You did. You made things worse. So those things people forget. And, yeah, you're right. He's made a mess, and someone's got to clean it up.
Well, I just hope that the next president can clean it up. I mean, it's such a freaking mess because now, besides ISIS, that which is obviously bad enough, but you have all these other Middle Eastern countries whose governments are in chaos. I mean, look around. And you have, of course, a what's going to be eventually a nuclear-armed Iran, and you have the Soviet Union, Russia, not necessarily the Soviet Union. They may be the Soviet Union before too long, if things keep going like they're going. But you're going to have now you have Russia in the mix, and we're kowtowing to Russia, and we're having to ask Russian permission to take a crap in the Middle East now.
Well, we've got Russian airplanes that are flying within a mile of our aircraft carriers.
Yeah, the USS Ronald Reagan, the aircraft carrier group is out there, and Russian planes within like a mile of, and I'm sure stuff like that happened occasionally with other presidents. I mean, I have no doubt about that, but what I'm getting at is before when stuff like that happened, it was a calculated move, and they knew that there might be a price to pay. At this point, I don't think they care. I think they're flaunting it. And, I mean, the fact that recently we had a deal where the Russian general goes to our command center and tells us, we're getting ready to go into Syria, and we want you guys to get the hell out of there because we're coming in. We're going to bomb the bejesus out of everything, and we don't want you. And basically, they were telling us like an hour before they're going. It's not like they discussed it with us when we had a strategic plan together. That is not what happened. Russia decided what they want to do, and they at least notified us an hour before, which is not necessarily enough time in some cases to get everybody to stand down and make sure everybody gets the word that, hey, the Russians are coming. You know, be careful. We don't want to start World War III. What a
mess. Tiptoe.
Well, this is what happens when you tiptoe. This is what happens when you leave a vacuum. First, ISIS fills it. And then you leave a vacuum in leadership to where Russia feels like they have the ability and plus our allies, people who used to be our allies, know they can't count on us anymore. So what do? They naturally turn to the Russians or the Chinese. And this is what happens.
You know, the thing to watch to me is going to be Israel. What is Israel going to do?
They're going to do whatever the hell they have to do. That's as simple as that. And
I've heard reports that Obama was ready to shoot some planes down or something if they were
going to. There are published reports that that there were scenarios where that if Israeli planes did this or did that, that U.S. planes would engage those Israeli planes, and that is just crazy.
That's nut. That is, if that doesn't tell you whose side this guy's on, nothing will.
I know. Jeez Louise. Well, let's get off of foreign policy just a little bit here. Let's talk about one thing we're going to talk about presidential politics, trust me. But one thing I wanted to bring up is, we've been talking the last 2-3 weeks, Ken, about the co-ops. So Obamacare co-ops are failing, and there's like 11. There's already been 5 or 6 that have already failed or whatever, and there's been now 11 that are on death watch that they think are going to go. And this past week, I think we've had 2 that have now officially failed, and that's in the state of Kentucky, which, by the way, Kentucky's Obamacare system was touted as one of the successes just a couple of years ago. And they've already lost their bacon. And I think the other state, well, I think Indiana, but I'm not positive. I'm not positive about that. But there's been at least 2 states this week that have gone kind of belly up, and all these other states are going to follow.
Another mess.
Another mess. And Obamacare simply will not survive as it's laid out right now. Whether you are for Obamacare or not, they're going to have to do something to fix that. Because think about it. They've got everybody being required to be on it or paying stiff penalties with the IRS and have these enormous premiums and et cetera. But the thing is not viable. There's no way in the world it can survive on its own without a huge infusion of cash.
And how does government fix things, Primo?
Well, they usually screw it up worse.
With whose money do they fix things with? Well, or try to fix things.
Well, of course, it's always ours.
That's what they do. Government creates a problem.
Yeah, there you go.
They go, we got to fix this because this is a problem.
They create an even bigger problem.
And then they have to wind up getting more money from us to try to fix their mistake, and they make the mistake worse and worse and worse.
Well, I mean, the original problem that they have created is generally because they've wasted money and or have not overseen whatever it is you're talking about at the time, right?
Because they're too big.
Because, and then of course, when they do that, they make it worse by adding more and more money into it. It's like the old thing of, pouring money into something is not the answer for, basically, to be honest with you, almost anything you're looking at, pouring money into whatever is failing is not generally the solution. Most of the time, it's 99% of the time, it's probably the worst thing you can do. But that's, of course, what government does. It does the stupidest thing possible every single time.
Well, that's why we're rigging conservatives, folks. People listen out there, we're rigging because we don't want bigger government. Bigger government does not work. Remember the nine words, Primo, that Ronald Reagan said, the worst words you could ever want to hear?
I'm here for the government. I'm from the government. And I'm here to help.
That's exactly right. And that's so true.
Yeah.
Bigger government does not solve any problems. It makes things worse. And what's worse than that is they take your and my money. It's not their money. It's our money. And they want more and more of it to fix bigger and bigger problems that they created.
I know. And what's so crazy is we keep letting them get away with it.
Maybe not. Maybe we got something going on here. Maybe it's for 2016. We got something going on. I hope so. I know we're going to talk about the. I'll wait my turn. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, we kind of got rid of a couple of things that I wanted to mention, and then we are most of the show is going to be dedicated to politics in terms of 2016. Before this last debate, CBS New York Times poll had Ben Carson edging out Donald Trump in the first national poll I think that's been done thus far, where Ben Carson was ahead of Trump. Now, since that came out, there was another poll that came out showing that Ben Carson was ahead of Trump also, another national poll. So that's like two national polls in a row, if I'm not mistaken, where Carson's edging out Trump. But the difference is not like a huge difference. It's usually within the margin of error. So the point is, Carson seems to be gaining some momentum. Trump seems to be losing a little bit, but trust me, he's still in good shape as far as that party goes, at least when it comes to polls. But before this debate that we had this past week, which, by the way, of course, we've not had a chance to talk about this until now, but before this debate, there was a billionaire that was considering, has given Rubio some money, Marco Rubio some money, and thinking about giving him more, was basically telling to Rubio that it's time to step it up. There's an article from Politico saying that this billionaire wants Rubio to step it up and get his game on and start becoming a bigger factor in the race. Well, I think he pretty much did that on this last debate. I think the two standouts, as far as I'm concerned, were Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, and I think Ted Cruz probably had the best line of the night. For those of you who did not see the CNBC debate, which, by the way, just so you know, because it wasn't really apparent based on the questions, it was supposed to be an economic debate. And really, there were very few economic questions in the debate, which is amazing. Which, by the way, in a couple of weeks, is going to be a Fox Business debate. It's not going to be the normal Fox crew. It's going to be the Fox Business bunch. It'll have Neil Cavuto and Maria, what's her name?
Bartiromo.
Bartiromo. I never can figure her name.
You can ask me. I remember it.
Yeah, I know you've got the hot name. So. But she's a good-looking woman. I don't blame you. Yeah. they're going to be hosting the debate. And I'm not sure if they're going to be eating others, but I've read an article where those two are definitely going to be hosting the debate. And so, and these people do know their economic stuff. So I'm hoping we have a more professional debate and something that will actually yield some results and find out where all these people stand when it comes to economic policy. But real quick, have you heard this rumor, Ken, that I saw it on Facebook and I shared it. I don't know if you saw it or not. That apparently Trump and Carson and all the major candidates are getting together. They're wanting to start. They're wanting to host their own debate. Have you heard this rumor?
I've heard that they got together. That they want. They're tired of the, and the NBC's kind of like on the outs anyway.
Yeah, they actually canceled the NBC debate temporarily. It's probably going to be reinstated once they take NBC to the woodshed for the CNBC debate. But.
Yeah, NBC said they were going to work diligently to repair the
damage and so forth.
I look forward to Fox debate, especially the business debate. The first one wasn't that great. I thought Fox tried to be sensationalized that a little too much, but
yeah, they did.
But the business thing, I like that because it's more substantive. Is that the word, substantive?
Yeah. And Cavuto has a good head on his shoulders. So does,
they do.
So,
and if you ever watch the Fox Business, you know that. But I think that's going to weed out a lot of things, and I think Trump really needs to be on his P's and Q's for those.
Oh yeah, if he can't shine in that debate, then I'm starting to wonder what his candidacy is all about, because that really is his area of expertise.
Yeah,
I mean, the fact is he's been able to make a lot of money for himself, but the reality is, does he know how to do that for the country? Maybe he does. I don't know. That's why I'd like to see an actual substantive economic debate. I like to see what his views and opinions and theories are on economic policy.
Yeah, along with Carson.
Well, yeah, that too. But I'd like to hear what Rubio thinks and what Cruz thinks, Fiorina thinks, etc. You know, that sort of thing. So. But this whole thing about setting up their own debate and choosing their own debate moderators, people are like shocked that this is even possible. But you know what? I did a little checking, and back in 1979, 1980, Ronald Reagan did this himself. He set up some debates, picked his own people that were because he wanted to have conservative moderators. Mm-hmm. It's like one thing that Ted Cruz said during the debate, or after the debate even, is that no one was confused that these moderators on CNBC, there ain't a single one of those people that were going to vote in a Republican primary, so why the hell were they even there? if you think about it, that makes sense.
That was very obvious if you watched the debate.
Well, yeah, it was kindergarten cop kind of thing. These people... They just didn't run a good debate, but the questions were ridiculous in some cases.
Well, they asked, you know, the things that here's the type of questions. The one with Huckabee about Trump, and was, did Trump have the moral aptitude to run the country?
The moral authority, yeah, that's
whatever.
What moral authority.
And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Well, the audience booed at that question.
Yeah. And I like that. I like that. And the audience booed in several of those. One of them was Carson. Carson had to stop. It was so loud.
Yeah, they were. I forget what the question was to Carson, but the question got booed when they asked Carson the question too.
Yeah, it's
what was funny is Carson goes, he raises his hands and goes, "Well, they know.
They know.
The audience knows what's going on here."
Actually thought Trump was being pretty nice that debate. He could have really unloaded on the media, and he just said,
"Yeah, he was rather subdued." I thought
he said, "That's a nasty question." I'm like, "That's the best you can do, though." It's nasty. That was, I mean, you could really unload on these guys like the rest of them did, but he kind of held back.
I think he's starting to listen to the talking heads. People are talking to him, trying to advise him. Well, don't come off so nasty. Try to be a little nicer. Try to this and that, and because his performance was. so like I say, subdued. And maybe that's because he was expecting all these economic questions and didn't get them. Maybe it threw him off his game a little bit. I don't know.
Do you feel like I feel that, Bush is just, he's on his way out?
Yeah. Matter of fact, I've got a story about that. We're at the time. We need to go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about that. And more stuff. We'll talk about Hillary. We're going to talk about her email stuff, which is, of course, there was some more. There was another document dump of emails this on Friday. Stick with us. This is the Red State Town Hall program. I'm your host, Primo Maldoni. I'm joined by my co-host, Ken Brown. We'll be back in just a few moments. Red State Talk Radio,
WRS Cleveland. Hi, this is Jeff Carlisi from the band 38 Special. The mainstream media has failed the American people once again. Internet radio networks like Red State Talk Radio will not fail you. Tune in 24 hours a day, studios A and B. Great conservative programming around the clock. Red State Talk Radio, the dominant force in internet conservative talk radio.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work-from-home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom36.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom36.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 36.com. Go to freedom36.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom36.com.
Do you use Viagra or Cialis? Have you been thinking about trying Viagra or Cialis? What if we could promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for Viagra, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pill delivers the exact same results for less than $3. We'll do the math for you. You save more than $16 a pill for the same results. Want more? We'll give you 40 blue pills or 40 yellow pills for $99 and add 4 more pills free. You save more than $500. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to know what to do next. You need to call 800-610-3497 and get your 44 pills for $99. Stop overpaying for Viagra. Call us and start saving a ton of money for the exact same results. Ordering is fast and easy with your pills delivered to your door in an unmarked package. Call us right now, 800-610-3497. 800-610-3497. That's 800-610-3497.
If you're diabetic, this message could change your life. Is your blood sugar out of control even when you do all the right stuff? Are you afraid of diabetic blindness and the risk of amputation, as well as all those other side effects? Well, you should be. Is there anything that could help manage your blood sugar? Nobedes is a natural supplement that may quickly and dramatically lower your blood sugar.
My name is Bob Corder. I've been using Nobedes for about 3.5 to 4 months now. And in the first 3 months, I've actually lowered my blood sugars from 500s down to 139, and then it dropped to 88 to 93.
My name is Kirsten. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and while taking Nobedes, my blood sugar levels dropped from 295 to 115 in just one day.
The FDA hasn't evaluated these statements, and Nobedes isn't intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. But for many, it's helped drop their blood sugar. So if you've been evaluated with high blood sugar, don't delay. Evaluate Nobedes now. Call 800-554-7159 and get 2 bottles free. Just cover shipping and handling. Call 800-554-7159. That's 800-554-7159.
Hi, this is Primo Mondoni, General Manager for Red State Talk Radio. We've been bringing you the very best in grassroots, common sense, conservative talk radio for over 5 years now. One thing I've learned in those 5 years is that internet radio is a tough, competitive business. And if the station is going to advance that next level, it's going to require a significant increase in investments in both personnel and infrastructure. Our listenership grew by 42% in 2014, and with our ever-expanding listener base, it's time that we begin the move to a more listener-supported model to provide the station's future financial needs. Therefore, we're asking our loyal listeners to consider making a donation to help us reach our goals. Monthly subscriptions begin at only $2 per month. So please, help us restore conservative principles to our republic.
Visit our website and become a Red State Talk Radio supporter today.
Red State Talk Radio. The Talk Monster.
The path to restoring our republic was laid down by our founding fathers. The principles of freedom, liberty, personal responsibility, and limited government are conservative ideals we will never abandon.
America is listening.
Grassroots, common sense, conservative talk radio. It's on the internet. Tune in now. Red State Talk Radio, featuring some of the most popular internet talk show hosts in America today. Are you listening? RedStateTalkRadio.com.
Okay, we're back. Ken was mentioning before we went to break about Bush that maybe he's fading fast. And there's a story that was on Yahoo Politics where there's a leaked Bush memo where they're complaining they spent all this money in Iowa and they're getting very few supporters. And very few people, they've only had like two people who volunteered for the Bush campaign. Two. That does not bode well. And we've said before, you and I both don't think he's going to do all that well in Iowa anyway. But he spent a lot of money in Iowa and he's getting almost nothing for it. And people are starting to wonder if, of course, investing money in the Bush campaign is a smart move. And I'm thinking probably not at this point. Like I've said before, I think he'll do decent in New Hampshire. I don't necessarily think he'll win New Hampshire. I just think he'll finish in the top maybe three or something in New Hampshire. But he's not going to do well in South Carolina. He's just not. So I think if I'm right and those three things happen, he doesn't do well in Iowa. He does okay in New Hampshire, and he gets basically drilled in South Carolina, which I think he will. I think you put a fork in him. He's done. I don't see how he goes on.
I think his little attack on Marco Rubio was ill-advised, and I know he did it. He knew he had to do it just to get some of Rubio's supporters or make Rubio look small or something. I don't know, but it backfired badly.
Well, it looked like desperation to me. Did you not think so?
Yeah. I mean, all those. Rubio just made him look small. Rubio went back at him and had a great comeback. One thing you can't do with Rubio is you can't put him on the spot. He's too good on his feet.
Well, that plus here's the other problem with what he did is he was talking about the fact that Rubio was missing votes in the Senate. He talked about that for like a week before the debate. So the Rubio people knew that was going to come at some point. And so now the fact is Marco Rubio is good on his feet. There's no doubt about that. But think about it. I mean, Rubio had an entire week to prepare. Really he did. Yeah. And so he's just sitting there like a tiger getting ready to pounce, waiting on Bush to unload that. And when he did, boom, it blew up right in his face.
And Bush was a non-factor from then on. In that debate.
Yeah, I thought for the most part he was non-factor in the entire debate. But at that point, yeah, he
had his moment in the sun, and he blew it.
Well, it was a potential to be a moment in the sun. And if he'd been smart, he wouldn't have brought that up until about the voting record, until the debate, so that Rubio didn't know it was coming. Now, I still think Rubio would have been able to handle himself just fine.
I do, too.
But the way he did it, I mean, that just shows that he doesn't understand the political dynamics. If you're going to spring something on somebody, you don't spring it to them a week before you're going to spring it. You know what I'm saying? You don't tip your hand. That's just
kind of like Iraq.
Yes, it's like common sense. Is with the enemy, you don't tell the enemy, well, no matter what, we're not going to do this. So don't worry about that.
We're going to withdraw this date.
We're going to withdraw this date, and we're not going to put boots on the ground, and we're not going to do this, we're not going to do that, and. Yeah. When you start doing that, you telegraphing your actions to the enemy. And let's face it, politics is kind of like war. And he telegraphed his intentions toward Rubio for a solid week before he tried to spring up this big surprise. And it was no surprise at all to anybody.
Well, I was listening to Erickson again. He's here in Atlanta, so I listen to him quite a bit. And he thinks it's a And when the dust settles, it's going to be Rubio Cruz. He thinks that Bush will fade out and that Trump will fade out soon after that, because Trump will come out and say that's really all he was in here for, to get Bush out. With it, you know, in so many words. And he thinks that the dust settles, it's going to be a Rubio Cruz contest.
Hmm. Well, he may be right. There's all kinds of theories out there, I'm sure. But
well, if you think about the money, where's the money going? You were talking about that billionaire going to Rubio.
By the way, this I don't know if it's the same billionaire or not, but the New York Times showing an article that Paul Singer, who's influential billionaire, has thrown his support to Marco Rubio. He's like made his mind up, and I guess based on this last debate, I guess. So.
Yeah, and I think this is kind of quietly stuff that's happening in the background, but Cruz has gotten money, I think, from day one. He's done well, and he's gotten a lot of money from the people like you and me.
He's got money from big fat cat donors and people like us, and he has always been in the top two or three in terms of money raised.
Yeah.
Even in the very first part of the campaign, when Bush had those huge numbers, the only one even close to him was Ted Cruz.
But it's been kind of quiet, hasn't it? I mean, you don't hear a lot about him. He's been quiet in the debates until this last one, when he made probably, like you said, the biggest statement of the night. And it was perfect timing for him. I think he's going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Oh, yeah. You know, one thing I wanted to mention, there was an article on CNN's website about the 2016 Republicans versus the media. Now, let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. If CNN puts an article on their website about the 2016 Republicans and the media, and that's coming from CNN, and CNN is reporting about the slanted coverage that they got in this last debate, that's kind of a big deal, because CNN themselves have slanted coverage. But of course, part of that is because CNBC is in some ways a rival to them. So I guess they're going to take every opportunity to denigrate a rival. But they make the case, and make a pretty good case, that the mainstream media, which of course they're a part of, definitely have a leftist slant. And we've known that forever, Ken. I think maybe some people in mainstream media are just now figuring out that they have their own bias. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but
I think when you say slant, I think you're being kind.
Yeah, that's probably is actually. It's more so of a. I mean, they're on the bandwagon. Shit.
Oh, God.
They're leading the parade. Let's just face it. They are leading the parade.
The thing about that I like, the best two things that happened in that debate for me was the Cruz comment about the media and Rubio's comment about Hillary. He called straight out her a liar. He didn't say she was misspoke or used untruths or those kind of words. He said she lied. She lied to the American people. She lied to the families.
Yeah.
I think that's what I want. I think we need someone to attack Hillary. She's not. I don't care if she's a woman. She doesn't have that. You can't go after me because I'm a black man, Obama type thing. You know that.
Right.
She doesn't have that. She's a Clinton, and the Clintons think they're above everybody else. And you need to go after her, tooth and nail. And I think he did it that night.
Well, what was good is that up until Rubio's comment, the only person on that stage that has actually called Clinton a liar was Carly Fiorina. She's done it numerous times.
Yes.
However, Fiorina, after her first two debate performances, which she did a really good job and gained some momentum in the polls, she's kind of slipped back a little bit. Now, I hope we've not heard the last of her, but what I'm getting at is, someone else need to pick up that mantle. Someone else need to take that on. And it's better if there's more than one person saying it. whether it be Rubio and if Cruz, but some of these politicians just don't like to use the word lie. They think that somehow is insulting. Well, you know what? If someone lies to me, I don't give a damn if they're insulted or not.
That's my point. I think you need to call a liar and to say it out loud and say and be strong with it.
Agreed.
And you're right. Fiorina did that, and she has done that consistently. But Rubio is the first really male that actually has come out and said it, you know, and he said it in a debate that's out there. I'm calling you a liar, Hillary Clinton, because you are.
Well, here's the thing. Maybe some of the other candidates, maybe Cruz, maybe even Bush, and I mean, just to go down the list, Carson, maybe they'll pick up on that and they'll all start using the word liar to describe this woman. And that, I'm telling you what, that will make it stick to people who, the people who aren't paying attention. We all know they're out there. There's people who would vote for Hillary no matter what. Mm-hmm. But if they keep hearing that she's a liar, she's a liar, she's a liar, she's a liar from virtually every candidate that's opposing her, maybe they'll start wondering, well, geez, maybe she is a liar.
It's a game plan out of the Democratic playbook. We were just before the show, we were talking about, you know, how the Democrats change the terms of everything. You know, got to make it work for you. And climate change was not climate change. It was global warming, global cooling. I don't remember the greenhouse effect. All that stuff was in the big. That was what all the talking points. Then it like overnight, it became climate change because climate change makes it worse. No matter if it gets caught, it gets cold. It doesn't matter. It's climate change, and they all follow that straight line. You know, it's like a memo goes out the night before. Well, don't say global warming anymore.
And so then it's amazing how well they communicate their message and how consistently they do it. And like you said, it's almost as if a memo goes out to every single liberal in the country, and they all know exactly on this date, this is what you say.
Yeah.
They are these people, we were talking about this again before the show, about liberals and progressives. They walk in lockstep, man. They don't deviate from the plan. Mm-hmm. And that's why these people make such great socialists and communists.
But you've got, in this case, you've got the truth on your side. When you call Hillary Clinton a liar, hey, you've got proof. There it is. There's her emails to her daughter, to the prime minister of Egypt. You called it. Then the very next day, it's a video. No, ma'am, you lied, and you lied to those families, the people that – and we're not talking Watergate here, Primo. We're talking about people that died. Four Americans died, and you're lying about how they died.
I know. Real quick, I want to bring this up. There's an article that from McClatchy News Service, talking about Clinton's email problems and the FBI investigation. And one thing that was in this, I rarely read stuff out of a article, but I wanted to read this particular little section here. So stick with me just for a minute. I'm going to pick up in the middle of the article, and it says here, most people who spoke to McClatchy says it's unlikely the former first lady, senator, and cabinet secretary will face charges because of her high profile and the hurdle to prove she knew the emails contained classified information when she sent them to others. Quote, she's too big to jail, not too big to fail, too big to jail, end quote, said National Security Attorney Edward McMahon Jr., who represented former CIA employee Jeffrey Sterling in 2011 in a leaked case that led to an espionage prosecution and 3.5-year prison term. He cited a pattern of light punishments for top government officials who have mishandled classified information, while lower-level whistleblowers such as Sterling have faced harsh prosecution for revealing sensitive information to expose waste, fraud, and abuse in government. At least 671 emails that Clinton sent or received through her private server contain classified material, according to the State Department's latest update this past Friday. From its ongoing review of more than 30,000 emails, her aides also sent and received classified information. So not just Hillary's emails, her aides have done this too. Huma Abedin and Cheryl Mills and all these other folks. And the point is here, I guess the big question is, Ken, is Hillary Clinton too big to jail?
I hate that double standard crap. I hate it. I hate that she's too big to jail. Are you kidding me? No one's too big to jail.
Well, let's maybe rephrase that. The way the world should work is that no one's too big to jail. The way the world actually works is there are situations where people are too big to jail. I just don't know if the FBI, the media, everyone else involved in all this mess would have enough guts to prosecute this woman. It's clear that she has violated the law. It's clear that she's violated the Espionage Act. It's clear that she has done all kinds of things that are against federal laws, and most of them are felonies. But will they actually prosecute her? And the only hope we have is that Director Comey and the FBI is going to do his damn duty for once. And I'm not picking on him per se, but what I'm getting at is we already know the Obama Justice Department, the Obama White House, they don't hold anybody to account.
No.
But will our FBI actually hold this woman to account and actually prosecute her for all these things? And if they do, if they file charges on her for various felony charges, I don't see how the hell she stays in the race. I mean, I don't know how the hell you go through a presidential race with an FBI investigation in front of you and actually being charged with a crime, with numerous crimes. Hey, she wouldn't be charged for one crime. She'd be charged for multiple counts.
Well, there's the book.
If they charge her.
There's a book that's come out recently. I can't tell you the author.
Ed Klein, maybe?
It's called Unlikable.
That might be Ed Klein's book. I can't remember. He's put one out here recently.
It's about Hillary Clinton. She won't be elected, and it won't be because of her emails or lies or any of those things. It's going to be because people don't like her. She's not Bill Clinton. Maybe because of the lies, because of her past, because of the way she is, because of her treatment of Secret Service and people around her. Those stories have now gotten out that people just don't like her. And you have to be liked to be elected president. You do.
Well, you know, you think that's so simple that it's like an obvious thing that if people don't like her, you won't get elected president. But look how far she's gotten without being liked. I don't know anybody who knows Hillary Clinton. I mean, of course, I don't know her personally, and you don't either. But what I'm getting at is, does anybody that knows her or knows her personally or known her for a long time, does anybody ever say, oh, she's so likable, she's so kind, she's so this, she's so that? You don't hear those comments about Hillary ever.
No.
Anybody. People who support her don't say that kind of stuff.
I was watching Saturday Night Live last night. It was taped. It came on about a month ago or so. And Amy Schumer, she was co-hosting. And I'm just going to use this as an example. Amy Schumer said in her little monologue that she met Hillary Clinton. Well, when she said that, she waited for the applause. And there was just a little splattering it wasn't like I got to meet Hillary Clinton, and she waited. And then it was not a reaction. There was no, it was kind of like, hey, and a couple of claps. And she went, okay, that didn't work too well. And she said she made that little comment after that. And I said, that's exactly what the guy I was talking about in that book, Unlikable. People don't like her. And I think that's, to me, what's going to hurt her in the long run is people just don't trust her, and they don't like her because they don't trust her because she's a Clinton and she's not Bill.
Well, the thing is, when you read all these accounts of people who know her and have had experiences with her, the image that comes across is, A, like you say, not likable, but it's more than that. It's that she's foul-mouthed.
She's a bee.
Yeah, she's a bee witch. She's a bee witch. And on top of that, foul-mouthed, and that she is just inconsiderate. Doesn't she think she's better than everybody else? And she just treats people like crap. And I mean, you've heard all these stories about the Secret Service people and the way she's treated them and stuff. Yep. And besides being foul-mouthed, she has a drinking problem. I mean, it is – now, I can't prove this, but, I mean, there are anecdotal evidence that she likes her booze a little too much. And I can see that. I mean, think about it. She is so vicious and vindictive and so – she hates her life. She hates Bill. She hates – all the bimbo eruptions. I mean, she's got plenty of reason to be a drunk, I guess. Maybe, you know, maybe that's a good excuse. So maybe I should have more sympathy and empathy for Hillary. But she's just a vile human being, as far as I can tell. I mean, I don't know her. You don't know her either, really. But all these stories cannot be just totally made up, I don't think.
No, I think there's a lot of truth to the smoke around this fire.
Yeah. Well, there's smoke, there's fire in most cases. Now, maybe not every single thing we've heard is true. Maybe she's not drunk. But there's no doubt she is a foul-mouthed witch.
Yeah.
That's been proven over and over again. And you can – she does not take criticism well. I mean, all that kind of stuff.
I think she thinks that she's going to be elected president based on her last name. And I just don't think that's going to happen. There's too much baggage of this woman.
Well, I think that was now Jeb Bush has probably never said this, and I don't know if he believes it or not, but I really think that he feels like it's his turn and he's entitled. And by the way, did you hear about this? That during the middle of the CNBC debate, the RNC, the Republican National Committee, was unhappy that Bush was not getting enough time.
I read that.
That in the middle of the debate, they contacted the people in CNBC and wanted them to give Bush more questions, give him more time, airtime.
Interesting.
Well, not only is it interesting, it's bullshit. That kind of stuff should not be happening.
See, that's where the media, they want Bush to be the person in the general election. Then they'll attack him. But it's because they think that having a Bush there, Hillary can be the Bush.
Well, I mean, yeah.
The media wants to decide who's in the race, in the general election race. They want to be the ones that determine which candidate from the Republican side is there.
Well, there you go. There's the trick right there. Who's going to be the Republican nominee? The media wants to determine that. That way they pick someone as best they can that will have a more difficult time with Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
I think somebody like a Cruz. Or Fiorina, all three of those, in a general election against Hillary, would mop the floor with her.
That's bad news for them. Bad news.
Of course, we thought Romney's going to win last time, too. So.
Well, but Romney was, he was still the old guard. He was his turn, quote unquote, to get up there and. This is not the – it's your turn, because if it was your turn this time, Bush would be right there.
Yeah. I mean, he started out strong out of the gate, but he has definitely dropped way back
in
the
back. And they've all gone, you know – and me and you are still – we're going, wow, I never would have thought Ben Carson would be leading the pack at this point.
Yeah, if you'd asked me when this whole thing first started, I would have thought Ben Carson would have been, like, way down in the pack.
And yeah.
He has been surprising. I would have thought – that Trump would be somewhere near the top just because he's Trump, you know.
Yeah.
But Ben Carson, total surprise.
Yeah.
Total surprise.
And I like it. I like that. I like that the country's like, we're tired of this crap.
Yeah, me too. Hey, we're out of time, Ken. You want to take us out?
If we lose freedom here, there is no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. Ronald Wilson Reagan, our 40th president of these United States.
That's it, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.